on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there. Welcome aboard. Great to be back for another year of fishing fun and plenty of fish to be caught too. Part two of our Mid-North Coast Masterclass this morning with the Waymaster Cole Trenneman targeting those big bruising bass of the Macleay with an advanced tutorial on big surface lures like soft frogs. Weedless soft frogs, they are truly amazing. The places you can throw them, quite extraordinary. Stinker is back on board for the new year and has a great tip on catching big whiting in the estuary that'll maximise your chances of getting a great feed. It's all coming up on The Big Fish. It's The Big Fish and the big fisherman from the Mid-North Coast, Trenno. It's been a fantastic night on the water. It'll be about, about 9 o'clock?
Yep.
We just fished the dark with some of your brilliant surface lures. But the thing that really impressed me were those soft frogs. And I'd seen people use them for barramundi. I didn't know the bass loved them so much. And they are the most amazing weedless lure. The places you could throw them, most lure fishermen would absolutely fear to tread. Take us through the evolution of using those.
I was with Mark Saxon there, and he started putting frogs on, and they were hard leg frogs back in those days. They're not the same as what we got now. They're a lot softer lure than what they were then. And you got stuff, you know, the other frogs that you were using, the other kind, and I was using the one we used for barra. But, and I got introduced to those, and I didn't like them. I thought they were a bit silly. I always liked the harder ones with the trebles on them instead of a single weedless hook in them. So it was a slow transition. Only been the last couple of years or 3 years, I suppose, I've picked them up and started enjoying using them and getting used to using them on a regular basis, and they're my actual go-to. And as you saw today, I got into some really gnarly stuff and managed to get the fish out of, well, I managed to get a couple of fish out of them, not the ones that mattered on the other gear, but yeah. But no, the frogs, mate, they've been a great weapon, especially this year. This year the frogs have been plentiful. You can hear them on the banks. The cicadas were a bit slow to come on. But and the frogs have been just going off. The frogs have been working, so I like them. You can cover a lot of area. They're a good search tool.
And down in this tidal reaches of this huge river that we're fishing, the mighty Macleay.
Yeah.
There's a gap. There's a gap between the foliage and the low tide and the high tide market. It leaves this little tunnel, and you skip these things in like a stone. I mean, the way you get them back up into the darkness. And we know that bass, they love the shade, don't they? They hate direct sunlight. They're night feeders. Their eyes are on top of their head. And the way you skip it back in there, like people have got to, I guess, imagine skipping a stone. And so you'll smack it on the water just before the snag and then fire it up way up where you're going to get snagged for sure. But these things, if you do get snagged, you pretty much don't get it back. But
that's right.
99 times out of 100... you get a smash. You know, that's incredible how you can deliver a lure, a big lure too, into such a tight spot.
Well, look, like today, this afternoon, we were using fizzies and you were using your fly.
I got a couple on the fly.
Yeah,
I think I won the fly fishing tournament today in Skidmark, which is Trenno's boat, with Trenno on the Macleay. I think I got three or four, lost a couple. But, you know, you can throw those frogs so much further.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, and we're fishing a big part of the river, and you can throw those a good 50, 60 metres, can't you?
Well, that's right, mate. And like I said to you, we're fishing other lures and we come back over the same area, and I said, hang on, I'll just tie this on, and I'll just show you how you use it. And I threw it in there, and what happened? First go. Bush go, there you go.
And I said, they hit it. And they get really excited by it. And now, we did do a segment on your secret really deep water lure. So you're either fishing right on the bottom, or you're fishing right on the top.
That's right.
You've got it worked out, and you got smoked by a couple of, they'd have to be monster bass. I don't know. Who knows if they're 50s or not. But no. they stopped you in the snags and popped you off on 20-pound line like it was cotton.
Oh, mate. Yeah, well, that's those skirted jigs. And I'm like I said, I had the little crotchy pattern on the back.
It was great to see it. You dropped one at the boat ramp onto its head. And they, as you say, they sit on their head with this skirt that's dancing like a hula dancer. And these two claws that stick up and rubber claws wiggle. You think of the movement of them is extraordinary. So they move without even moving it.
That's right. So that there, and I'm using 20 fluoro for a litre, and I'm using, if mate Dave hears this, he'll ring me and he'll give me a bit of talking to you. He said, I've told you to use 30. I said, I know, being sporting, 20. But I've got 20 braid, 20 litre, and like you saw, I got the tap and I've just tightened up on them and it just took the drag and that was it, boom, and it was, wow. And there was a few choice words said too.
You were right in the thick stuff too.
Right up there.
So both of these techniques, the rubber frog, the soft plastic frog, and the jig that stands on its head are really designed to fish where the bass are, which is right in the deep heart of the snag and right up under the trees and in the bungee.
See, if you're looking, if you're fishing of a night, like, as you saw, we changed to fizzes, the fizzy cicadas.
They're great too. They've got a soft body.
They work really well.
Who makes those? A local bloke.
Yeah, Eddie Studman does. My old mate from Coolabunga. Oh, Eddie, g'day Eddie, if you're listening.
Gee, he's a genius. I couldn't believe. And the fish like those because they're not hard like the wooden or plastic ones. They're soft when they bite them.
The beautiful thing about those is there's, as you saw, there's three or four good ways you can use them.
I caught a fish on one of those.
Oh, I know.
So one of Eddie's. Hey, shout out to you, Eddie. Thanks, mate. You've got me a beautiful bass. And they go like a little propeller.
They do. They got a little fizzy propeller on it. And they work really well. And like you said, they're soft. The other thing, getting back to the frogs just quickly, the other thing is too, you're using weedless hook. And the beauty about weedless hooks is you can get into that country. But like you said, if you get hooked up, well, that's it. They don't come back. Right up the back, because there's no way you can actually physically get up there to get them.
Nasty.
So, but when we changed over later, well, actually, when we got, we had that weed bed and that boil, and he come up a second time and had a shot at it when I stopped it. And I learnt that from the when I was fishing the Clarence. And I used to pull the lure away and then go and have another cast. And what was happening, I was getting hit, and I suddenly just stopped the lure, like the frog, and it goes boof, and they missed it, and I stopped and just twig, twig, and they came back onto it. And I thought, well, there's something, you learn something every day.
And they do sink a bit too. You've got to sort of lift your rod tip to get their nose out.
That's right.
And the other thing I've noticed, I've seen a lot of them used on barramundi, and the bass fishermen in America use them in really tight country. I mean, you can throw it into anything. It's the greatest weedless, snagless lure in the history of lures. But one thing I noticed is that you fish it very slow and you make the legs really work. They just boom, bloom, 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 bang.
Yeah, well, I've a lot of blokes turn and burn them and they just throw them in and they whiz them out really quick. They get a reaction bite out of it. It's like throwing a TN60, which is a vibe lure, throwing it in and just cranking it back to the boat. They're looking for a reaction. You're looking for the reaction bite. But what I found out is if you slow that lure down just enough, it'll still work really hard for you, but your hookup rate's a lot better. And you'll get a lot more fish that'll come up underneath them, as you saw today.
Yeah, and what you do is you lift your rod tip to get the nose up, and then drop it a bit and slow roll, and the legs really work. It's the Big Fish. We're on the banks of the Macleay, just sitting here after a brilliant afternoon on the bass. Some big bass too. The biggest was about 37 centimetres, and quite a few fish over 30. Probably caught 20 or 30 fish all up. I got three or four on the fly, I think.
Three or four
on the fly. So I showed Treno that you can catch them on the fly. But down here in the big water, the lures are king, aren't they? And those hand-painted soft rubber fizzers, yep. Those amazing frogs. And they're cheap too. That was a thing that I couldn't believe. You can buy a packet of those soft plastic frogs.
Yep.
You've got to buy the right sort of jig hook that goes into them.
That's right, the right weedless hook. Yeah.
Weedless hook that goes into them. But you can get three or four of those in a packet for sort of $12 or $13.
Yeah, something like that. But like I told you, the ones that I was using, the white, the toads, I can get a full session. And I probably, that one there I can use again next session because they're really tough. Whereas the other ones are a little soft. They're a good lure too, but they're a lot softer.
The toad's a barramundi lure though, isn't it?
They is, mate. Yeah, we use them. I use them up in Mondi or a Wonga for barra on the surface.
Are there a lot of bass fishermen using these soft frogs now?
Oh, lots. There's a lot of them. I was up here the other day. I think it was Wednesday, because Weedless Wednesday. I post up a Weedless Wednesday, the best fish of the morning. I usually post that up. And because I've been requested brag mat only, no ugly head in there. So that's why I put it on the brag mat instead of having my ugly head in there. But I was up here the other day, and they were a little bit sluggish on the frogs. So I sort of went down and was using just like a subsurface bent minnow.
Used that,
and I did all right on that.
They're like $35 each. I don't know about throwing those into the snags.
You don't go that quick, mate. No, you don't get that close. And if you do, you make sure they come back out.
Yeah.
You break everything.
But we didn't lose much, did we? We didn't lose many. Oh, well, you lost a couple on fish. No.
Lost a
couple on fish. But, well, that's mission completed.
Yeah.
We got bass on fly and lure on the McClay and a good lot of bass. And I can see the lights of Kempsey. You know, we're right down in town. And tomorrow, what are your plans? I'm going to fish the Manning. I was excited when you said we might fish at Harrington. I've never fished at Harrington, but now you're thinking maybe Foster.
Oh, well, I went down to Foster this morning and picked up my new canoe.
Love your bass, don't you?
Love me bass, so I can get up into that remote country to catch these bass. So I picked up my new, well, it's not new, it's an old town 119 Discovery.
It's a mini Canadian, really, isn't it?
Mini Canadian.
Yeah, it's an old school type canoe.
So it's nice and wide, nice and stable, good enough for an old fella like me to sit in and then catch a few bass. And on the way over, I had a look, and the water looked really good and ran out there for a while. With the ocean being, and we're fishing so close to the mouths of the rivers and that, and with our, the run-out tide, you're getting all that nice warm water coming down. So I reckon the flatties might be a little bit more responsive on that sort of tide.
Water always looks nice at Foster. So it's a toss-up between Foster or Harrington at this
stage. If you're following me and I turn left at Harrington, we're going to Harrington. If I miss Harrington, you know we're going to Foster.
All right. So and what's the target species?
Flathead, mate. The big girls. I'm going to be throwing some big plastics. Excuse me. Some big plastics. I'm going to probably throw me bents as usual. And I've also got a couple of new big swim baits. I wouldn't mind throwing them around and having a bit of a go with them. But we'll also try and get you a feed to take home with you, Mr. Levi. So.
All right. Well, hopefully we get some small ones. With flathead these days, it's rare to say, oh, I hope I catch smaller ones.
Well, see, funny enough, on those 150 bents, the amount of flathead I get between 40 and, or say, 45 and 55.
Perfect.
Oh, mate, they have a crack at them. Oh, I did tell you, I was down there with my mate Ben. Last year we were doing a flatty comp down there, and I got 20 whiting, about 40 to 43 centimetres.
On the bent minnow?
On the big 150 bents, over 2 days.
That's a huge lure for a whiting.
Well, I don't know whether they thought it was encroaching in on their territory or something. They came up and smacked them, but they tasted yum.
Well, I wouldn't mind a bit of that action. Anyway, mission one completed. We've smashed the bass on the McClay, and because we promised we'd fish between the Manning and the McClay. So, I don't know if Foster is between the Manning and the McClay.
We call it the southern arm of the McClay.
Yeah.
Or southern arm of Manning, there you go.
Manning. No, well, we're giving the mid-north coast a good go, and a great evening on the bass. I mean, it's just fantastic, mate. Thanks so much. And I was really excited to see that technique with the soft plastic frogs, the weedless frogs. That was spectacular. And the way the fish react to them, they're not as good at hooking the fish, but you're putting them into places where you're not going to put any other lure anyway. So you've got a bit of a trade-off.
Yeah, look, sometimes with a TN50 or 60, I'll throw them with a single hook back to the belly, or the and you can get away with that. You can cast them in for a reaction, but reaction bite like that, if they don't want to come up on the surface. If they're sort of slow on the surface and they're sort of, that I usually pull out a, I should have showed you that today as well, and I throw in a one of those, a 10, 50 or 60, and I'll do the same thing and just stroll it out back to the boat, just easy out of the snags there too. And they work to a degree, and they still get snagged, but it's a, just a single hook under the belly, facing back to the lure, makes it weedless and makes it nearly snag-proof.
Mate, as they all the good bass fishers say, if you're not getting snagged, you're not getting bass. You're not fishing properly. You've got to snag up quite a bit. But your accuracy at casting was spectacular today. I was blown away by that skip. You skip it three times, land it short of the snag, fire it way up into the dark where the bass are, never see anything, and they just smashed it. It was terrific to see, Colin. It's interesting that technique of skipping it too. You're not really casting. You're casting before the location you're trying to land the frog and trying to skip it back up. But just amazing. And hey, guess what? For listeners to The Big Fish, Cole was also using egg beater reels, spinning reels, not overhead casting gear, which you see the American bass blokes use, which are very accurate. You've had those too, and you were using those with your other surface lures. But you can stop a spinning reel from going too far too, because if you're overthrow, you can stop it, can't you?
That's right. Well, see, John Costello, he does YouTube, My Lure Box, it's called. Mm. And John, I watched him skip cast for jacks up there in the rivers and creeks up there on the far north coast, or more up around there, Tweed and that. And I thought, that's the go. That's how you get them. You get right up in the back. And I watched a few of the other boys doing the same thing. And I sort of taught myself, okay, just with the egg beater instead of the overhead, I get better at, I got more accuracy. The only thing I like about with the overhead is you got more control, as when you're fighting the fish.
Your thumb control.
Yeah, with the fish. I call it the thumb drag. Press it down, don't let the rod bend. So in saying that, you've got a bit more control when you've got the fish on. But
you can lock it up with your thumb if it's going into the snag.
Which I couldn't do today with those other things.
You got smoked. I tell you what, the line literally exploded, and the spray came off it twice. Big fish hit Col in the snags, and there's one there with his jig. But they've got a sort of a really interesting weed guard too. It's like a little brush.
It's like a brush. Yeah, that's what it's. Yeah, it's got that brush in front of it. So it does work with a bit. I did get stitched up on the timber there, and one of them, and I left one of my favourites sitting there. I know where he is, and I'll get him on the low tide next time I'm up, hopefully. Yeah, so
maybe he'll give you a lure back. Anyway, that's mission accomplished. We've hit the mighty Macleay. We're heading down towards the Manning tomorrow, and our mid-north coast fishing adventure continues. We're going to target flathead. So the target species is flathead. Is that the plan?
That's the plan, Stan. Maybe a whiting too. I might even actually throw a little rod in for a whiting.
I should put a little sugar pen in. We might do a bit of popping for whiting, eh?
Correct. That sounds right.
Trenno, having an absolute ball, mate. The mighty mid-north coast is fired up, and mission accomplished on the bass. Let's get into the flathead tomorrow on the Big Fish. I think it's time to go home, mate. It's well past 9 o'clock.
It's beer o'clock, I call it.
I think it might be beer o'clock. Good on you, buddy.
No worries, mate.
Thanks for joining us on the Big Fish. It's the Big Fish, and a really heartening story from north of the border about the army of people rehabilitating the habitat in our rivers and estuaries to bring back the fish. Oz Fish Unlimited doing that all over the country in New South Wales. And Stephanie Smales hit the water to bring you this very positive yarn about the Merry River cod.
On a quiet bend of the Brisbane River, about an hour west of the city, Gary Fitzgerald and his team are counting fish.
There we are. We've got our first cod for the morning.
He's big.
He's big. That's really exciting.
They're electrofishing, briefly stunning the fish with an electric current so they can be caught and measured.
2688.
The team is taking note of all the species they're catching, but it's the endangered native Merry River cod they're hoping to find. They have released tens of thousands of baby cod, or fingerlings, into rivers across the region in the past 5 years.
So we're introducing those to replace the extinct Brisbane River cod. By putting the apex predator back in the system, it's going to help restore that balance. So early stages of a recovery project, it's critical that we measure the work we're doing.
Spring is a busy time of the year for conservationists, and Gary Fitzgerald says he's juggling his full-time job with hours of volunteering every week on the river. But Gary Fitzgerald explains building Mary River cod numbers could be a turning point for this ecosystem.
Kind of a little bit like putting the wolves back into Yellowstone National Park. You know, it restores the balance. You know, the cod will knock off the weak and the slow, or the genetically inferior of some of the native species, and help control some of those introduced pests.
Gary Fitzgerald's team is using federal and state disaster recovery funding and some private donations to do their work.
First, we've got to establish the fish, but then we've got to fix the habitat. So we're already getting our head into that habitat space.
Down the road, a big pile of logs is growing on a farm, ready to go into the river to create Mary River cod shelters. The locals call them cod logs or cod hotels, and there's evidence they're working in other parts of the state.
It's a literal truckload of hollow logs that have been salvaged, which instead of being sent to be burnt off or wood chipped, instead they've been stockpiled here.
That's Caitlin Houghton from the state government's threatened species team. She explains volunteers are a key part of the conservation puzzle, and she says councils from across the region have started working together too.
It's so important that we have other groups to support the work and deliver the on-ground work. We just don't have capacity all the time.
Back on the river, the discovery of another healthy Mary River cod is a positive sign of things to come.
Beautiful, healthy condition, in good weight.
And you can see how that fish could eat other fish.
Oh yeah, have a look at the mouth, you know, could nearly get a soccer ball in that mouth.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Fish. Fish Show.
Tight lines.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott. How you going?
Going well, mate. I know what the bait is. It's yabbies, and you've got a very interesting tip for yabby or nipper fishers. We'll share that in just a bit because you're on the Tweed where the nipper beds are extensive, but you didn't get to sign off at the end of last year. You were following one of your other passions, the cricket.
I did, and I'd like to have said Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all our listeners at the end of last year, but I never got the chance because I was in Adelaide at the Test cricket, which I really did enjoy. And I couldn't really do a program from the Test cricket because I couldn't get everybody to keep quiet.
That's Barmy Army. Never shut up.
I said to the Barmy Army, listen, I'm trying to do a radio program. Is there any chance you guys could be quiet for a while? That wasn't going to work, Scott.
No. Well, I got a gut full of them at the Sydney Test because we had tickets to the MCG day 3 and day 4. And, of course, that didn't eventuate. So we got our money back, but we got in for day 4 and day 5 at the Sydney Test. So that was good fun to watch the Aussies hoist the trophy aloft and retain the Ashes. It was a terrific series, Stinker. Enjoyed it thoroughly. And the Poms do bring a bit of colour to it, the Pommy fans. They were all crying in their beer, but their banter was good.
Oh, yeah. I've met quite a few of them in Adelaide, and we really enjoyed their company. But now, as you said, I'm back on the Tweed, and I normally spend January on the Tweed River in the Terranora Lakes, to be more accurate. I've got a punt and an 8-horsepower motor, and I've got a pontoon at the back of the old family home, a mango tree and oysters in the backyard. I mean, it's a great place away from home, a fantastic holiday home. And so for me to go fishing, all I really need to do is wander down, jump in the tinny, pull the cord and off I go. But some bait is always an issue. But as you said, again, the yabby banks are so incredibly extensive. I mean, I'm talking acres and acres, and they're only inches apart, the holes. They're like a big honeycomb. And I think the last time I went digging, my best for one dig was about 7 in one dig. So if you get 7 yabbies, you can average, say, 5, say, you can average 5 yabbies every dig. You don't have to spend much time digging before you've got enough yabbies to go fishing.
No, the pumping can be hard yakka. But I had a little bloke with me, just mad on fishing, 9 years of age, and I had to put them on the hook, and didn't he laugh? Every time one bit me, he thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And they can give you a decent go, those big males, particularly with that one giant arm like Popeye, they can go right through your finger.
Oh, dear me. I tell you what, for a little creature, they can inflict incredible pain. And that's true in my family too. And once I start, everything's nice and quiet. We're all fishing out in the boat and it's a lovely day and everything else. And all of a sudden, someone starts screaming. So what's happened? And this little yabbies grabbed hold, especially down beside the fingernail. And it does hurt. It really hurts. And, you know, everyone thinks it's so funny. Unless it's them.
That's right. It's hilarious unless it's you. Yeah. This little bloke I took out, Kai, he thought it was the best fun ever. And then the little 5-horsepower motor decided to break down. I've got to go and pick it up from the mechanic before I go out this weekend. And it just stopped midstream into a really strong run-in current. So I had to row for a couple of hours in 40-degree heat. It was like a scene out of the African Queen or Quo Vadis or something. He thought that was fun too. He had the best adventure. I tell you what I did catch. We caught some beautiful whiting, and I know you've been catching some stonkers, but I got a 50-centimetre silver trevally on 4-pound line on one of the yabbies. Boy, did that give me a bit of fun on the sand flats. But the sand flats are a good place to play the fish, aren't they, Stinker, because you can give them a bit of drag if you need to.
Tell me what you did with the trevally.
I gave it away. I filleted, skinned it, took the bones out, cut the bloodline out, and gave it to some rellos. So hopefully they enjoyed it.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people who don't know, it's interesting because it's got a reputation in our house anyway as it goes straight in the crab trap. There's no way. But if no one knows that it's got a bad reputation and you cook it on the barbecues, fillet it fresh and throw it on the barbecue, people who don't know the reputation say that's the most beautiful fish. Well, that's how it is with fish. You get a... So I'm not going to eat any more of that stuff. I don't like it anymore. And trevally, I would never eat a trevally. No way. It goes straight in the crab trap. But there's a question I'd like to put to you. And I know you dig yabbies when you go, or nippers. It's interesting. Some people call them green nippers. Others call us nippers and yabbies. They're all yabbies up here. Everyone calls them yabbies. But now, say you dig, say, four or five dozen yabbies, which is not difficult, and you only use three dozen, so you've got two or three dozen yabbies left. Now, what do you do with them?
Well, what I try to do is break them into three bits while I'm fishing and just trickle feed them as burley over into the current, because it runs pretty hard where I am. So you don't want to take the fish away from where you are, but you just give them a little bit every now and then, and that tends to bring the fish up towards you. But yeah, you end up with some left and you'll go back to the sand flats and you'll try to put them back down their holes, but the seagulls have different ideas, don't they?
They do, though, yeah. So, you know, you're going to think, what am I going to do? You can't tip them over the side of the boat because that's basically condemning them to a miserable future, because the little brim are looking at you all day. And if you tip half a bucket of yabbies over the side of the boat, well, it's Christmas, isn't it, for the little brim. But so that's not the way to do it. So if you can't get back onto the yabby banks at low tide, because if you go there with knee-deep water, they still get the brim, will get them, put them in your freezer. Now, this is what I did 2 days ago. I had a little bowl, and I had probably 3 dozen yabbies, I suppose, good ones, and I put them in the bowl alive, and then I tipped salt water out of the river on them, and then I gently put them in the freezer, and it froze them solid. And then 2 days later, my friend arrived, and we went down at the first of the run-out tide with using frozen yabbies, and we got 3 cracker whiting, really big, good, solid, broad-shouldered, bright-eyed whiting on frozen yabbies. You've got to be a little bit careful because you can't cast too far. You can't cast too far. So when you put them on, they're not as solid or rigid as a live yabby. They're a bit sort of slack and loose, as you can imagine. But they work. Don't worry about that. Frozen yabbies work.
Gee, that's a great idea. I'll often bring them home and put them on the aerator, but then I've got to go down to the lake and pull up some fresh water and change it. It's quite a tough job to keep them alive. So put a little ice brick in, you know, keep the water cooler. So that's great to know that it works. But, when they're live and they're kicking and jigging on the hook, Stinky, you won't get a better lure than that, will you? But you're saying that they're as effective frozen.
Oh, look, I mean, well, if you use a prawn, 95% of people use prawns, they're frozen. Not everybody uses live prawns. And prawns are a very effective bait. Probably more fish are caught on prawns than anything else. And just yabbies, if you treat them the same, some people put them in a very strong brine solution, and that gives them a bit of rigidity. But I just stick them in seawater, freeze them in the fridge. When it thaws out, gently put them on your long shank number 4 hook, toss them out with your 6-pound line, let it float around a bit, and whacko. I mean, that's... Fish don't care too much.
No, it's great to hear, actually, because you want to, use your bait. And my estuary is very tidal, so the yabby beds are under, 4 feet of water, a metre of water, if you're not on the dead low, so you can't really get them. So having that as an idea, I'm going to give that a bit of a go. We're speaking with Stinker. It's the Big Fish. Great to have him back for 2026. And sounds like the whiting are really biting in the Terranora Lake system.
They're beautiful fish, really beautiful fish. Tell me, there's another yabby question, and this is a question without notice. Have you ever dug high tide?
Have I ever dug them at high tide?
Yes.
Well, yeah. On when I'm desperate, I've got a floating sieve. I took a pool noodle and zip tied it around the sieve. Then I tie that to my belt with a little bit of cord, and then I go down up to my armpits with the pump, and I pull it up and out and shoot it into the floating sieve, and then pick them out, mate. It's a workout and a half. It's damn hard work, not to be recommended.
And most of them escape anyway.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, look, what we've also found in the Terranora Lakes, I had a quite interesting experience. I took my grandson up there a week and a half ago, and a manta ray left the water right in front of the boat and come totally out of the water, and a massive splash, and he yelled out, "What's that?" And it was quite spectacular. And then a bull shark come close to the boat, and that was all excitement as well. And then we caught some beautiful whiting. Oh, there are cracker whiting. And they put up a fair show too. The rods we're using are only little El Cheapo rods with a little reel and, you know, 6-pound line and 4-0 more likely hook, and let them go. You know, whiting are a lot stronger than you might think. They're actually a very, very good fighting fish on light line and a little pokey rod. They can go, really go, and they'll buckle up and try and go underneath the boat. And I always scoop them because I'm too frightened to lift them out of the water with a light line, whether the hook pulls or the line cracks, you know.
And they're such a great fish, John, that when you do lose one, when you it's quite sad, isn't it? You it's quite stressful because they are the best eating fish in the estuary, and a big one comes up beside the boat and you're very cautious because they can get off.
That's right. When you see it swimming away, you think, there goes a beautiful meal.
Exactly. They're very valued. What else could you catch fishing those nippers in the sand flats on the Tweed system?
Well, what you'll always get a flathead. It'll be always a flathead that'll take a nipper. And you've got to treat him gently too. You can't go tug a warring a flathead with a 6-pound line, because 9 times out of 10 they'll have swallowed the hook. And then if you try and pull tug of war with a good flathead, he'll win every time, because your line will just he'll just wear through your line and off he goes with a smile on his face. So yeah, flathead you'll get. Brim, they're a damn nuisance. The estuary is full of brim. I can't imagine there's so many, and so you've got to try and avoid them. They'll get stuck right into your bait. They'll put a big hole in your bait, the brim. But the one that's really sort of starting to become more common is a javelin fish, which is a grunter brim. And we never used to catch them here. When I was a kid growing up here on the Tweed, no one ever caught a grunter brim. But now they're quite common.
They're a good eating fish too, Stinker.
They are, and they can put on a fair scrap too on the same light line. So you can go up into the lake. You're only in 4 or 5 foot of water, maybe 2 metres of water. You drop in your anchor at both ends so it's square to the tide and the breeze. So you've got plenty of room to fish if you've got a mate on board. You throw out 2 lines, maybe even 3, and you sit back and just enjoy the whole experience. And wait for the rods to that great noise, the snapper. Not to the degree that the snapper takes off, but I'll tell you another one that really goes off, and it's another problem, stingrays.
Oh, yeah. I just cut the line near the mouth to not tangle with the tail, but I think the fish follow the stingrays too, and my sand flat spot, if there are, you'll catch the stingrays and just let them go without any harm. But the fish tend to follow along behind them and eat what they dig out of the sand. So I think it's a bycatch that you don't want, but it also indicates that the big whiting will be somewhere in the vicinity too.
Oh, well, that's true. I mean, it's only common. Fish are pretty smart when it comes to that. I mean, all they think about all day is eating. They've got another great thoughts. Maybe certain times of the year they think of reproduction. But Jim, apart from reproduction and eating, there's not too much thought process goes between through a fish's head. But when you go out there, if you can tempt them with a good bait, you're in business. Oh, you know, there's a lot of lure tossers up here in the Terranora Lakes too. And they're all chasing flathead. But the flathead here aren't like they used to be. You get occasional ones. Oh, gee, I don't like to tell them because they spend hours and hours tossing these lures, and I just think, oh, look, mate, you should have been here 30 years ago. You know? But I know, so you hook a big stingray and off he goes. Well, you've got to wait for him to stop. There's no way you're going to pull a tug of war and beat a stingray. So when he gets beside the bait, I just grab the swivel in the centre and give it a quick yank, and that'll crack the line, and off he goes. I don't tangle with them. I just let them go. But the place is lousy with them, Scott, because there are so many yabby holes. If you go up there at low tide, you'll see where the stingrays have been. They make a sort of a disc in the sand. And, oh, dear, there's hundreds of them.
Yeah, they're a very important animal to the health of the estuary. I was speaking to a scientist the other day, and they're called bioturbators. And the yabbies and the stingrays turn over so much of the sand, aerate it, keep the sand flats and the ecosystem and all the worms and all the other invertebrates that live in that environment that the fish eat, they keep it healthy. So what they're doing is very important. The way they suck and filter and dig those holes, Stinker, it's actually a really good gauge of a healthy estuary.
Oh, most certainly. It's all part of the biosystem and the environment and the ecology and the, I mean, that's everything relies on everything else. That's how nature works. But I'll tell you one thing that is concerning to me, Scott, and it's become incredibly obvious, and I don't know whether the people of the Tweed have actually tagged onto this yet, but because I only come back sort of maybe three or four times a year, I see changes as change takes place. If there's a gradual change, people don't notice it. But the big change is that the seagrass banks are disappearing at an incredible rate. And over these seagrass banks, that's where we used to catch the big gar. So the big gar can't be found unless you can find seagrass. Now, you may well ask, why has all the seagrass disappeared? And when I say so, I mean acres and acres of seagrass has disappeared. And sooner or later, it's going to concern somebody. And you might ask, well, why has the seagrass disappeared? And the answer to those who spend time on the water might surprise quite a few, but one of the greatest problems is swans.
And an observation that has been made on your estuary back home too, hasn't it, over Tea Gardens way by some of the long-time residents?
It has. And people take a step back when you say that. Where's all the seagrass gone? Has it been water quality or salinity, or is the water too hot or too cold, or what's the problem? Well, sit there and watch swans for half an hour, and then you come and tell me what you think it is. Because they'll swim in groups of 6 to 8, shoulder to shoulder, and they'll just swim along together, and they're just continually dipping their head into the water, and they pull out seagrass by the roots, and they'll chew on the tender shoots, and then they'll progress. And a couple of days in a certain area, you go back, and it's a desert. Now, what can be done about that, I do not know.
I tell you what the young fella did hook into the other day, fishing for whiting, and it's great that you're doing it up there, I'm doing it down here. First toss with a big live yabby, bang, his line went straight away, and off it went. It was a huge long tom, which was giant jaws, like prehistoric jaws, and he brought it to the side of the boat. He did really well, actually. He's a good little fisherman, Kai, and I said, oh, mate, look at that, and So I lifted it up by the line, and I thought, well, that'll bite off. But it was just hooked in around one of the teeth, and I got the knife out to cut the line, and it grabbed the knife, and you could hear its teeth clacking, the big, long. And he thought that was the greatest thing ever. You know, wow, look at that monster.
Yeah. Well, every creature in the water, I was told, is there for a reason. My grandfather told me that. They said every creature that's in the water is there for a reason. Well, I haven't worked out what long toms are in there for yet. I haven't worked out what poor Jackson sharks. I reckon they're pretty useless creatures too. And I can probably toss in pike eels as well.
Oh, so pike eels, aren't they the worst? Yeah, that's true. Anyway, their mothers would love them. Hey, Stinker, it's really great to reconnect and have you back on board with the crew on the Big Fish. We just love your stories and... it's great that you're up there as well, because the people of the far north, right on the border, get their part of the world talked about as well, and they have you as their favourite son.
There's one thing I must mention, Scott. It's great being back on the program.
You went to the school reunion. You went to the school reunion, didn't you?
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention. And the amount of people up here in the far north coast that listen to this program, I'm surprised. I go over to the Seagulls Rugby League Football Club to have tea, and I sit down with the group, and they always say, oh, yeah, we heard this, we heard that. And they go back and they can tell me the history, too, of things we said ages ago. But one of the highlights, and it was this week, that I was the MC at a reunion of kids that were the first year at Tweed River High School in 1965. We left at school in 1965, and of course that's 60 years since we left school. And there were over 60 turned up with their partners and family, and we had the most wonderful time. Organised by a couple of ex-students and a couple of our teachers turned up. And it was just a sensational experience to meet up with friends. And when we did go to school here, it was just a great experience because all the students were just such good fun and good friends, and we never knew anything about differences of appearance or anything. The only difference I found with the South Sea Islander kids, the Aboriginal kids, they could all run faster than me, and I couldn't figure that out. I said, how come I'm so slow? But it was great to see them all.
It's really beautiful that you've been able to revisit that stomping ground of your happy days as sort of Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer. I can see you now. Tight lines, buddy.
Hooray, Scott.
This is a story about me and my old man. Right through my life, the best friend I ever had. Every minute counts, no matter what you do. If he's working on a weekend, I'm working too. Looked up to my old man from the day I was born. Watch him working hard from dusk until dawn. There's so much more I'd rather we would do. But if he's working on a weekend, I'm working too. He said, hey there, son, what's on a weekend? I said, let's drop a line down Muller Creek Bend. He said, I'd love to, there's so much work to do. I said, if you're working on a weekend, I'm working too. He said, thanks for the hand, now the work is all done. How about we hang out like father and son? Said, the rods are rigged, now I've packed up the lure. Said, if you're fishing on a weekend, I'm fishing too. Man retired and he stopped working hard. Mostly hung out annoying my mom. Come the weekend, always something to do. If I was fishing on a weekend, he's fishing too. Story about me and my old man. Right through my life, the best friend I ever had. Every minute counts, no matter what you do. If they're fishing and working, you're fishing and working too. If they're fishing on a weekend, you're fishing too.
listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.